This is Today in Money. I'm Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Mark, the U.S. Debt hit a milestone, $40 trillion. How do we comprehend that, and what can be done about it, if anything?
It's over my head. I have no idea, you know, how you're going to pay it back. And then on top of everything else, as you know, in the last, 48 hours or so, the U.S. Treasury announced that it's going to double the maximum size of buybacks for its long-term Treasury securities, apparently, you know, in an attempt to keep interest rates from skyrocketing even higher, which would cost the government even more in interest payments, obviously. Where are they getting the money for that? I mean, it's the old computer. You know, even Ben Bernanke talked about that in his interview back in, was it 2008 or 2009? He said that he was interviewed, I think it was on CBS News, not my favorite network, but, you know, in effect, they asked, are you printing money? And he responded, well, essentially I am, and they hit a little button on this computer, and they print money. So what's the solution? And I don't have it. You have to stop printing money. You have to pay down your debt, which means you have to cut back, I suppose, substantially on government expenditures. That includes social welfare, Medicare, Social Security. The interest payment alone, from what I read, Jim, you probably know all this, on the U.S. debt is greater than the military budget. So it's insanity beyond control. And the U.S. dollar has been pulling back in recent days, which helped the gold market temporarily. At least it's up last few days, which, you know, I'm very bullish on anyway. But, you know, what good is, you know, gold? I made that prediction, gold at 38,000. I mean, I don't know if that's happening in 6 months or 16 years, but it's where I think China is sort of betting the price will go ultimately based on the research that I've read. What good is your money at $38,000 gold if the government is in debt? You know, what's the world going to look like? You know, does that mean, you know, a quart of milk instead of being a couple bucks is 20 bucks or something? You know what I mean? It just, it's sort of an insane situation. And there's more insanity going on in the geocosmic, you know, world that I've been writing about too. Other stuff that, you know, my cycle work, you know, said watch out. And I've been telling people this, and it's in my forecast model, which is worth every penny, that there would be a high in August and a substantial pullback. And it probably started in the last couple of days. The Dow, I think, was down about 700 today. It doesn't look good on the charts, particularly when a company like Walmart came out with their earnings today and got slammed. I think it was down 7, 8, 9% for a big stock like that. Bad sign for the economy in terms of, I guess, retail expenditures and so forth. That disappointed a lot of people. So that's a component of the Dow Industrial Average. So obviously that impacted the decline that we saw today. So long-winded answer, I don't have one, or short-winded answer, I don't have one. How you solve the problem? You know, if you're in debt, what do you do? You know, do you refinance it? You try to, how do you pay it off? You cut overhead and expenses. So if they really cut dramatically to bring down the debt, the company, the country, you know, the U.S. will probably go into a depression, because all this money that's spent every year is needed to support the economy and support seniors that have, you know, retirement benefits coming with Social Security and so forth. And you're going to cut the military budget, and you have to cut that interest payment on the U.S. debt. You have to have Kevin Warsh drop interest rates from, of course, that's the short-term rates, that's the Fed rates. He has to drop it from, you know, where it is now, what, around 3.5%, 4% or whatever it's at, down to zero. He's got to do what Jay Powell did after the financial crisis in 2008-09. You got to get down to zero, and that would help pay back some of the debt at lower costs, but that's not going to happen. And, of course, next week, week from today, I think, which is a full moon, by the way, the Federal Reserve meets in Jackson, one of my favorite places on earth, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and they sit there at the Jackson Lake Lodge, which is a beautiful facility, and you look out the back window and you see the Grand Teton Mountains, which I hiked many years ago. I actually ran into a bull moose when I was taking that hike. I'm lucky I'm even alive today after having encountered one on the trail. But that's a whole other story. So the Fed's meeting next week this time, and they don't expect very much to come out of that. It's not a meeting. It's just a presentation, and they all do some fancy speeches, and they get to take a break at a beautiful place. But it would be nice if something dramatic happened, like, hey, we're going to cut rates to zero. Now, of course, a lot of people would see that as a big negative, and maybe the stock market won't like it, and on and on and on. But, you know, that's certainly a piece of the puzzle. So anyway, I think I covered your first question.
Now, how's gold going to, is gold, you said gold reacted to this with the U.S. dollar going down. The long-term outlook for gold for you still positive?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you know, it's this question, like I say, where gold is at higher levels, what does that do for you? You know, you have gold and then you exchange it for worthless dollars that are declining. So, and there's also the risk that there could be a confiscation of gold, as happened in the 1930s. There's no guarantee that governments are insane. The people that run the governments, including ours in particular, and all the governments are crazy, and depends who is politically in charge at the time. You know, the insane Democrats is probably a good description of them. And, you know, of course, Roosevelt was a Democrat, and he did that back in the 1930s. So, you know, how do you know that they don't force confiscation and have you turn it all in? So they'll say, well, either turn it in for dollars, which are going down in value, and then what does that do for you? I guess give you some dollars, but you'll eventually lose your buying power because gold was providing a hedge. So that's a risk. So, but gold's responding because it's a flight to safety. You know, China is behind behind this in a big way by buying it. So is Russia. And, they see the dollar going down, and they see, the value of the currency depreciating, and that historically helps alternative investments that are, you know, solid, normally real estate and metals and commodities. In fact, today, many of the commodities in the last few days, commodities have been moving up, you know, things like corn and soybeans and sugar and cocoa, and that we have ETFs on that, by the way, in our newsletter, and they've been doing well. So food shortages and stuff, you know, have been, or need for the cost of producing them and the cost of selling them is going up and up and up. So that's sort of a no-brainer. So I guess, you know, farmland, physical commodities, gold, real estate, stuff like that, you know, are going to be more precious than the dollar or the stock market. And the stock market can't sustain this. I mean, it's going to, you know, usually you got the plunge protection team and all these government vehicles out there to try to support the market. And, of course, with the current politics the way they are, they'll do what they can to keep the prices up. But the end result's going to be a crash. And, in fact, I talked about this, you know, it's in my newsletter, you know, if you look at previous presidential administrations going way back, regardless of who is in charge, whether it's Democrat or Republican, you get, at some point in the cycle, you get a nice shakeout. So I would expect, is it coming this year or into next year, you know, a nice 25 to 45% decline coming, you know, somewhere in that range, So the question, does it start at this level or from a higher level? There's going to be a shakeout that's coming. Certainly the news we're getting here about U.S. Treasury having to buy back the bonds. Who wants the bonds? I mean, we know that Japan is not going to buy our bonds, and they were one of the biggest holders of the bonds, and they have their own problems. They're not going to buy them. And we know China is less interested in buying our bonds, which have been, you know, a big source of purchasing power. So, not too good. Not too good what's happening. And then I'm also concerned about the geocosmic and political, and people usually hang up when they hear this, but there's other stuff going on, but we can address that now or later.
Mm-hmm. Anything going on with uranium?
Well, I haven't looked at the chart the last, couple days. You know, I can look at it right now while we're online. I mean, the ETF for uranium, let's see how that's been doing here. I would assume that, you know, uranium stocks, if I can pull up the chart here, you know, as any metal, you know, anything that's related to a physical metal or commodity would generally respond positively. So the question is, so I may have to delay the analysis on that one. I don't know if I can pull it up or not. See here. I haven't looked at uranium for life. Cameco was the big stock that I tracked, and I haven't been following that for a while since it had a temporary peak. So I'm going to have to pass on the uranium question. I can't pull up a chart now, and I don't have any uranium-related positions right now. We've been mostly focusing on the gold and silver in the both the metals and the shares.
Copper?
Copper's been the standout in terms of, you know, its performance, in recent weeks. It actually made new all-time highs relative to other metals. So, I would say yes, stay with it. It's bullish. It's a metal. It's an alternative investment. And it's needed for all kinds of, technological and industrial needs. Of course, if the home building industry turns around, which doesn't seem to be happening except in the high priced categories like Toll Brothers, it sells to more affluent investors or purchasers. Until we get a sharp turnaround there, I mean that would help copper even more. So let's see if that happens. Of course, there's government programs and incentive now. We don't know what's going to happen with the rates if they really bring them down, and that could help the very needed, the home building industry. Of course, at the same token, a stock like Home Depot, which is sort of considered a barometer for that industry, hasn't been doing too badly. And some of it has to do with, contractors and repairs and other stuff going on versus new construction. But that's been holding up quite a bit. So I'm still sort of favorite to Home Depot, regardless of whether we see new home construction explode or not. But there are government programs that just have been initiated that are trying to push for that. A lot of political reasons to make it happen, Jim. So we'll see how it all pans out. If they get people buying homes, they give them incentive, they can bring the rates down, the mortgage rates, get things cooking. That's going to help both either political party. And I think it's something they're going to be pushing for. So I guess I'm going to remain more optimistic because everybody else is pessimistic on home building and interest rates and mortgages. I mean, I remember when I was much younger, I think I told this story, when I was buying a house when I used to live in Chicago many years ago. This was during the Paul Volcker days, when they were fighting inflation in 1979, 1980, and you couldn't get a mortgage 15-16%. It was like crazy. So I remember I was happy I got an 11% mortgage at the time, and I was grateful for an 11% mortgage. And now today, people are upset about 6%. Of course, they can argue that prices were cheaper back then. Home prices were cheaper back then. There was an offset compared to today. So it's not only an interest rate function, but when I think about the fact that I had paid 11% and you can get mortgages around 6% or so now, that doesn't sound that bad to me. But I guess you got to have the income and you got to be able to afford the property and so forth. So a long-winded response to your copper question.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this. Today in Money is archived on YouTube at Talk Digital Network. Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with the bond market?
Well, the rates have been going up and the bonds have been going down, which is what happens. And it's just an inverse relationship there. And, you know, this bond buyback program that I just discussed, and the fact that interest rates have been upticking. I think the 30-year bond, if I'm not mistaken, hit a new high in the last couple of days as well. So not too good. Now, we got the tail wagging the dog. You know, the Fed has control over the short-term rates, and the bond market is independent of the Federal Reserve, and sometimes the Fed, is like to say the expression, tail wagging the dog. The bond market is the free market, you know, the actual market, which I always felt should be the case, and there should be no Federal Reserve. You know, let the free market determine rates. So the free market is not happy here, and rates are going up. So the bond market's going down, and as the best bond prices go down, interest rates go up. So that's the reality here short term. And the question is, what's going to turn that around? You know, it doesn't look too good here. I want to see lower rates, and I like to see the Fed lower rates and take them to zero, which would help, you know, reduce the cost of the debt. But can they do it? And how will the bond market respond to that? The bond market may say, gee, they're panicking. Things are really, really bad. So rates have to go even higher to compensate investors for the greater risk that would exist in that scenario. So, you know, you really want to watch the bond market. And if that's, you know, rallying, rates are coming down, they were for a while, then that would be, you know, a positive for not only for stocks, for home building, for mortgages and all that cool stuff. But it's not happening at the moment. So I don't control it. I'm just following it. That's what's happening. So hopefully it changes, but it doesn't look too good here.
Anything of interest on the geocosmic front?
That's an understatement. That's where actually I've been focusing more of my attention. I mean, there's a global disaster watch underway right now in my work. I mean, stuff going on, you know, Mount Etna is erupting. I'm watching Mount Pele and Martinique. I'm a big follower of earthquakes. Indonesia remains active right now. There's a bunch of Pacific tropical storms developing. The Atlantic is a little quiet right now. Europe is suffering from extreme heat. The super El Nino could be the biggest global story, and that could be affecting a lot of this. And, you know, I'm a big follower and believer in the work of Edgar Cayce, which many of you may have heard of, probably the greatest psychic of the 20th century. Read all his books, did a lot of research on him for many years, and none of it all worked out, but he came up with stuff like, you know, you're going to find secret chambers under the Great Sphinx in Egypt, and sure enough, they start to find that decades later. And just unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's, you know, and I get into a lot of the stuff. And we're not even going to talk about UFOs or extraterrestrials or all that other good stuff. That's really hot in Washington right now. It's not really talked about in the financial press, CNBC, the networks hardly even discuss it. Huge stuff going on in Washington about this. The hearings, the New Paradigm Institute, and disclosure. But the Cayce thing is that one of Cayce's predictions, and, you know, I'm a big follower of Hapgood's work. I think Albert Einstein wrote the foreword to his book, and he talked about continental shifts on the planet, you know, where the continents move dramatically, and that's what causes some of the great Earth changes that we've seen. You know, many attribute it to asteroids and stuff, but could be, you know, continental shift changes. So Cayce wrote about this, and he said that you have to watch that if when Mount Etna is erupting, which it's doing now, and if Mount Pele, which is in Martinique, it's showing early signs, but it's not erupting yet, occurs, we're going to have a 60-day warning for huge flooding occurs, potentially on the West Coast in the U.S. and Canada. That means possible earth changes, tsunamis, all kinds of not fun stuff could happen, and a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of lives could be lost and a lot of disaster as a result if that prediction comes true, because you're talking about not a polar shift necessarily, which is a whole other issue, but it could be a continental shift change of some kind. So he wrote about it, and I monitor stuff, and the fact that Etna's been erupting the last 7 or 8 days, and stuff's going on, Minor and Pele, Martinique. You just got to watch this stuff. There's not much we can do about it, obviously. I mean, if there's an Earth change, it's like an asteroid hitting. Obviously, we're all gone. You know what I mean? It's nothing we have much control of, so... But it's something that I like to observe and watch, and I suppose just to be aware of it. You know, I'd rather not be caught by surprise. You know what I mean? If an asteroid is coming and I see it, at least I know what killed me, right? You know, I don't want to be. I don't want to have a surprise. Oh, by the way, we should have told you the asteroid was coming. You know, I'd rather, you know, enjoy my last few moments knowing that it was coming versus a surprise. Others may feel differently about that. Of course, the dinosaurs didn't care. It just happened and they got fried. But regarding the Earth changes, I'm just watching Edgar Cayce stuff and see how the volcanic stuff is unfolding. But we are experiencing a lot of negative Earth changes and stuff right now. And there have been many other times like this. And you know, maybe the cycle that said the stock market was going to drop from an August high and come down maybe is part and partial to a lot of these other cyclical forces that are at work right now besides just financial. So long-winded response. That's what's been keeping me on my toes the last few days, watching these neocosmic events unfold. It's a lot of fun for me. I'm actually in Flagstaff. Many of you may know this who listen to the broadcast in the summer. It's at 8,000 feet. But we're sitting right under Mount Humphrey, which is an extinct volcano. And it always occurred to me, you know, many volcanoes can come back to life, particularly if there's, you know, significant earth changes. So I'm saying to myself, I may be sitting right under what ends up killing me in a sadistic sort of way. That I'm actually put myself in a position. Now, this volcano is not active. I think it's blew its top about 100,000 years ago. But there are studies that show the north face of it is getting a little warmer, and extinct volcanoes have a nasty habit of coming back to life given enough time. So I'm sitting here looking out the window at Mount Humphrey, which is a 12,000 foot peak. And saying to myself, I don't want to see any tremendous earth changes because I'm going to be bait for the disaster here if something like that really happened. It's not going to happen. I just speculate about this stuff. It's all fantasy. It's like science fiction on a certain level. You think things could happen. It might happen in 10,000 years, but it's just something that I like to dwell on. I guess getting involved in the market and cycles and stuff over the years, Jim, has brought me to this level. I mean, I just can't believe it's only human beings that control, you know, what happens in the markets. You know, there's greater forces, and we've learned that's the case. We learned that there's lunar cycles that affect people. The seasonal patterns on the planet affect people with crops. The astrologers believe that the positions of the planets affect us, and I have a good friends that are astrologers that have been doing it for decades who make some extraordinary calls based on astrological stuff. And keep in mind, astrology is going back thousands of years. It's just not a new creation. It goes back way, way back, even to the, you know, times that you just the beginning of, you know, human civilization. There are records of, you know, they find in Sumeria and Babylonia and all this stuff. So and then that's all the civilizations we know about, not about the ones that have been destroyed by earth changes or asteroids. And that's been my belief as well. And I think history is starting to prove that there were greater and very powerful civilizations on the planet. I guess the most famous is Atlantis and others that Plato wrote about and so forth that existed prior to us. And we think we're the top and the top of the heap here in terms of technology. Others may have existed prior to us and they got wiped out either by earth changes or asteroids or something. So we're only dealing with written history that we've been able to identify or uncover. But, in any event, that's where we're at.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening. Comments made on Today in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Today in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer, Tom Allen.